I hope government and municipality of Yerevan will be with us with this, as they were with us bringing WCIT to Armenia. This time we are going to propose them to invest in our homegrown event. Mm-hmm. And make it more international. And actually, last two and this Digitech, we see a lot of interest from Georgia, from Iran, and even from China. So if not this Digitech, next Digitech, you'll see Chinese companies in Digitech presenting their companies.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the EVN Disrupt podcast. My name is Nejdet Zatharyan, and I'm the editor of the tech section here at EVN Report. Our guest today was Sarkis Karapetyan, the CEO of the Union of Advanced Technology Enterprises. UATE is a business union that represents the collective interests of companies and organizations operating in Armenia's tech sector. We spoke about the different directions that UATE has, including policymaking, education, outreach, and the Digitech Summit. Sarkis shared his overall vision for the organization, as well as what to expect from the Digitech Summit this year, as it takes place in parallel with WCIT in Yerevan this coming October. Thank you for listening. Sarkis, welcome back to EVN Disrupt.
Thanks.
You're the first ever guest to come back three times. You were on the 9th episode, the 59th episode, and now the 89th episode. So there's a pattern of nines here.
Wow, that's an honor and a responsibility.
Let's see how you handle it. So last time you were on here was, you were still the interim CEO of UATE. Now you're the CEO of UATE. I'll urge our guests, our listeners, to go back and listen to the second episode that you were on, where you described overall what UATE does. But tell us, what have you seen change in UATE over the last year or so that you've been involved full-time there and now that you're CEO?
I'll go into details in a bit, but on a high level, the main big change that we see in UATE is the energy. At the end of the day, every interaction between people and businesses is value exchange, energy exchange. And what makes me more motivated is the positive energy around UATE. Of course, nothing is ideal. We did a lot of mistakes. But the most important part is that the team is super motivated. I could say that we already have a team and the community is excited about UATE. We see almost every day we receive inbound requests, people who are interested to join UATE community or offering any sort of different type of partnerships. That's a signal for us. And to quantify the energy, only last recent quarter, we had 40 new members in UATE, and this quarter already another 24.
Wow.
So to compare with earlier, when I joined UATE, we had around 100 members.
Total.
And at the end of the year, we got 28 new members. During that year, we also lost some members, but since the changes we applied, internal work we did, starting from April this year, it started growing exponentially. So we are now almost doubled.
Right. Yeah, that's incredible. One of the things that we have a lot of mutual friends, and often when they talk about your reign as CEO of UATE, they say you're running UATE like a startup. Is there something to learn there about running just organizations more generally that's not necessarily a startup?
Let's define what means running as a startup. First of all, maybe that's because I don't know other ways.
You were a founder before.
Yeah. Considering my background, right. I don't know other ways. Second, when we talk about like startup way of doing, that has a couple of components into it. First is the culture. So today, the most important thing is that how fast your organization can unlearn and learn new things, the old way of doing and learn new way of doing. That's constant in UATE that I bring from the startup cultures. Relentless experiments, retrospectives, new ideas, innovation, and nobody is afraid to fail. Versus the traditional way of like our organizations where everybody is afraid of losing their job, of doing mistakes. In our culture, it's encouraged mm-hmm. to do mistakes because, like, move fast, break things, then go back and fix them.
Yeah.
So now the world is a competition of how fast you can do accomplish something, and that comes down to how fast you can learn as an organization.
Mm-hmm.
So if people are growing, learning new things, organization is growing and learning new things. That's one thing. Another thing is that you set ambitious goals. Sometimes people in your team do not believe in it. They even do not believe in themselves. As a leader, this is the beauty to see in them this potential, to encourage them to set this goal, even brutally, like fixing the goal and helping them to accomplish that goal. This is how you increase also the motivation. Because, like, if you do this couple of times, then you see people are already willing to take challenges. And of course, to learn fast, a very important thing is that you create a environment, feedback-friendly environment, both between the team members, and here you don't want to see any hierarchy. Intern can give me a feedback,
right?
And I do as well. So this is like every team member should learn how to give feedback as well as how to receive and incorporate the feedback, do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key to successful growth.
It's interesting. Like when you think about traditional organizations, not even companies, NGO style organizations, nonprofits, things of that nature, which UAT is part of the tech community, but it's not a company, it's an organization, right? There's a lot of inertia around how things are done at these kinds of places. And breaking from that inertia is very, very difficult. And there's something to be said about how startups are built and run that makes them very effective. That people from the startup community think if we were to apply these methods to other parts of both organizations, sometimes people speak about it like the country level, etc., things would be a lot better. Do you think, like, as our ecosystem matures, people with a lot of startup experience would take that into non-traditional startup-y places and change management level culture in the country? And do you think that's very far away?
Absolutely. We already see this trend. I'm an example.
Right.
So I came from startup world and changed everything in UST. And we see that even outsource company founders are adopting more and more the tactics, the strategy of how things are run in startups.
Mm-hmm.
But here I would be also cautious. This is like what I learned this past few 2 years in UAT, is that there is a healthy amount of bureaucracy that need to grow with the organization. Once you grow enough, you see it becomes a little bit chaotic. It's time to
implement
some policies, systems, processes, and with it, like, some bureaucracy.
Yeah.
So if you push heavily on bureaucracy, you become
a traditional NGO.
Yeah, traditional NGO. And another thing that I have been experiencing, and I learned from the experience of being a mentor at Impact Hub, different projects. So Impact Hub is doing many projects like impact investment in social entrepreneurship. And I see trend that all donors are already emphasizing the point of like social projects that have sustainability component to it. Basically, they have a business model to fund themselves. And you can't rely on donors all the time, and it's not effective to do it. Also, if you try to solve a problem with donors, with donations, which is, but there is a profitable business model to solve this problem, someone will start a business and knock you out from the market.
Right.
So NGOs are for problems that aren't allowing sustainable, profitable business model, like recurring
revenue.
Business revenue, while solving this problem. And I think we also see that huge organizations are already promoting, people are writing books about that we need to come to the middle. Because if you are going more extreme business, one thing that matters is the bottom line.
Right?
No, if you optimize, impact. If you long term, like every year, 10 years in a row, optimize only bottom line, then you see that things are starting breaking, people are leaving the company and so on and so forth, because people are want to be attached to some mission and so on and so forth. And if you go the opposite side, extremely all philanthropic, that we see a lot in Armenia, unfortunately, like a lot of people with good hearts but not that competent are committing to solve problems entirely like with philanthropic reasons, I think that's also not effective. So we need to solve problems with business models and let the philanthropists solve only the problems that could be monetized.
So an NGO should exist only in absence of a business solution to a problem?
I believe so.
It's an interesting way to put it. Yeah. UAT has a lot of arms. It does a lot of different things. It's in the education space through Armat. It lobbies the government for better policies around the tech sector. It hosts events such as Digitech and things of that nature. How do you find the common thread between these? Like when you're trying to explain to someone why you do all of these things, what's the central piece of it?
One of the hard things in changes was that actually when I joined UAT, we saw some teams are working in silos and I couldn't understand the connection between the projects. One thing is the mission and the vision. So if we all agree on the mission that we want to develop Armenian tech ecosystem, the key word here is the ecosystem where many components should be existent to have an ecosystem. And then if we set a vision that we want to be number one country with tech GDP, it means all the money that comes into Armenian economy through investments, through sales and so on, divided by the population of Armenia, we say tech GDP per capita. Then you have two ways of doing it. One, increasing the number of people in tech and increasing added value for each tech employee, meaning they should be working on high value, high margin products versus web apps or like outsourcing. Even in outsourcing, there are high value things. If you do AI, if you build AI applications, then you get paid more and then you have more value, not speaking about building your own product. So in that sense, we have four strategic directions. One, education and workforce. So now everybody in the team and the community understand why we are doing this, because we want to increase the number and the quality of experts.
Okay.
Then second is ecosystem building, which means we need to have decent policies that are allowing companies to thrive. I say we need to have regulations that are making the process of starting, growing, and selling a company in Armenia frictionless. So that's the goal for our policymaking department. We are looking for bottlenecks in the regulations, talking to the government, trying to find a common ground to make sure also we are not breaking things while we are fixing things, right? Here I'm happy to say that we got a very great team here with international world-class expertise. And I'm proud to say that this is the first time that we have our own policymaking capacity on this level.
Mm-hmm. Is the what you said earlier, making Armenia the highest per capita tech GDP country in the world, is that the central thread that drives all of these initiatives? Is that the overall like North Star that UAT is shooting
Absolutely.
For?
Yeah.
That's interesting. You said you mentioned there's four components. You said education and then the ecosystem. What are the other two?
So the next is like we need to do business development for our companies, right? For Armenian tech. And here we have two tools. One is the big events like Digitech, WCIT. We are looking also to other events, mm-hmm. both doing in Armenia and going to other participating in other events. Second is having economic delegations. We both host delegations and we go with delegations with our member companies. This year we went. We are very active with China, Embassy of China, and we had four delegations already that went to China, and we are going. We will go with another two delegations. The topics are different. Starting from Web3 to digital economy to smart agriculture mm-hmm. to many areas sectors, so we also go to European countries to Arabic countries and so on, and the goal here is to collect data and make connections. The next step for this will be starting our own business intelligence team within UATE to make analysis and to see how we can open new markets for Armenian companies. Because what we see now, the economic downtime, this is the right time to think about diversifying our markets, because our industry is heavily dependent from US and EU. It will be continued, of course, but we need to also have diverse markets. So in this area, we need to create these links for the founders to find their customers in new mm-hmm. markets. And the last direction is that if you want to become a tech center, then you need to develop also other sectors. Digitize them, have them use effective technologies and so on. And you need to have other industries know what we have in Armenia, what we are building in Armenia, because we see a problem that Armenian companies, not tech companies, are buying technologies from abroad, and they even don't realize that that company is sitting couple blocks away. So we need to solve that problem, as well as helping the government to implement right policies here and right technologies in cloud computing, digital tools, and so on and so forth. Here we need to do more job, because recently we see that we had a couple of fails. When I say we, I mean whole ecosystem. And now we see that government is shifting more to buy from international big corporations. That I understand why they are doing it, because it's stable. But also we need to consider giving a chance to local companies to come to that level, because if you don't give them chance, you will never have this level.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear the link and the different components to it, because I remember the first time when you had first joined UAT before you were interim CEO, I forget what your title was, deputy something, right?
Maybe. I don't care about titles. Yeah.
Whenever that time was, I remember seeing you and I remember asking, is that what you're doing full time? And you said it's something even more than full time. And I didn't have a grasp of just how vast UAT's operations are. And then the first time I came to the UAT office, I thought there's like dozens of people working here. It wasn't how I pictured UAT. So it's interesting to hear the different components laid out. I want to dive into a few of them. So on the policy making side, I think this is like a really ambitious project, right? Because now you have a team that's directly lobbying the government on policy positions to make a more favorable tech sector. Is there an outline of the primary things that UAT cares about for that right now? And why those ones?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, we are very well attached to the community. There is no single day that I don't see at least five CEOs. And when we see the first question is, how are you doing? What are your top three challenges? And this is how we prioritize things. So right now, hot topics that are in discussion and we are working on, the first is the Maine high-tech law that has been going for 2 years now. The main goal is to make Armenian ecosystem competitive again, because now we see that in the region new ecosystems are raising and they are pretty aggressive in their tax policies.
Mm-hmm. This is incentives and things of that nature.
Yeah. Here we need to fix that, and I hope soon HTI ministry will share a new version of draft that we have been discussing very long time. Second is the recent changes in tax authorities offered that brings a risk that some founders might appear in the jail because of some mistakes.
Okay.
So we are trying to stop that, and this is going very constructive discussions with tax authorities, and we raised the question, and we are working on now together to come up with a solution that solves the problem for them and also doesn't threaten other
founders.
good players.
Right.
Let's put it that way. We also care about hybrid education. We care about the cybersecurity regulations, GDPR compliance, crypto regulations. Those are the topics that are in discussion. Mm-hmm. As well as the most important thing is the long-term strategy that we are trying. We are not saying that UAT is the only organization that can do strategy, but UAT is an important player that could come up with its own research and recommendations, of course.
On the topic of the general law that will govern the high-tech sector more broadly, one thing that I was really curious about was with WCIT coming up and all these international companies or representatives from international companies being in Armenia, I believe the government has some plans to make proposals as to why Armenia is a favorable place for them to come and do business and things of that nature. So it would seem logical that the draft of that law or the proposal in place would be ready by then and be presented to them. Is that something you know about or can comment on?
We hope so.
Yeah. Okay. I asked Haik the same thing 2 weeks ago and his answer was about the same thing. Okay.
Yeah, that's the situation, unfortunately.
Yeah. Because it brings an element of...
Well, let me talk openly, right? I'm getting a lot of time this question, and I see that within the question, there is this signal that people are waiting for me to complain about that, to finger point to people, to government officials, to anyone else. But I believe if we go that way, we are not going anywhere. And this is my position to any problem, being that small problem within the organization or big country level problem. There is this mea culpa rule that first you need to ask what I didn't do well. And we ask this question in UAT and we started policy making group.
Right.
Because that was the key point that we understood, that when you ask the question that way, you are not like pointing who is... of course, there are people who are responsible for this, and we are not happy how they performed. But we are not here to complain. We are here to deeply understand the problem, because with the entire country, we have competency problem. Of course, we have in the government as well. And if we look at us, at our organizations, we also have a lot of competency problems. So the goal was that how we increase the competency and capacity. And we started this policymaking group to answer that question. And we are happy to support the government here to have decent policies in place.
On a more broad level, whenever there's an industry that is doing well in any society, there comes questions of why should there be, in the language that they would use, things like special conditions for those industries, for companies that are coming in, especially if they're making a lot of money, and it seems from the outside that they're doing really well. For having a policymaking department and as an organization that represents the tech sector more broadly, how do you think of your messaging to Armenian society more broadly on why the development of the tech sector, things like incentives and things of that nature, is good as a whole? Because I think sometimes that messaging is really hard to get to the average person who has nothing to do with tech in Armenia.
I think here we also, the community and the government all together, we failed with the communication. In terms of how we call those financial operations.
The incentives.
Incentives. So we call them help, we call them
support.
Support. That's not the case. That's an investment. Mm-hmm. So we need to call it investment. Why we are investing in this direction? Because it's effective. Just as simple as that. It's effective. So one tech employee creates 3 to 6 other jobs in other industries. Mm-hmm. So that's just effective. And in terms of monthly or hourly rate, it's three times higher than the average. So meaning for the economy, a person working in tech versus a person working in textile is like 3 times, sometimes more times, difference in efficiency of creating added value. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that 90% of tech is export, mm-hmm. which is, again, very important, considering the fact that we are very import-oriented economy and we need to balance that.
Right.
So that's very simple. I don't want to go any other. And when we go deep, I always bring the example of wine. Just yesterday, we were talking with the organization that is working on NGO that is promoting wine and helping winemakers and so on and so forth. And I was asking them to do research to understand who are drinking, who are buying these wines, because Armenian wine industry is growing. And I believe that the reason it's growing, the coffee business is growing, wine business is growing, because tech industry is providing the critical mass of 50,000 people who have decent salaries
and their consumers,
and who traveled the world and had the chance to try good coffee and wine.
Yeah. Everything you say makes total sense, but do you think from a messaging perspective, numbers convince people for society more broadly? Like, do you think, like, the number you said of every tech employee creates 3 to 6 jobs? Mm-hmm. I've seen the studies. I totally understand what you're saying. But I know if I go to the people who don't understand what we're talking about, citing, you know, some Brookings Institute study on the economic multiplier effects of tech jobs is not convincing them. Is there like a more psychological level?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we are missing success stories and promotion of these success stories, because like the ecosystem is very, very young now, and we don't have a startup founder that became a millionaire and driving Ferrari, because now driving Ferrari is associated with oligarchs, kids of oligarchs, and so on and so forth. Now people need to see a couple of people who are driving Ferraris, and they are simple people, tech guys who made a fortune just using their creativity and talent. And we are close to that. I think next 5 to 10 years we'll see. We need to fundraise for Hrant. You know Hrant Khachatryan, right?
Yerevan.
We need to buy him the latest Tesla or like whatever car is out there, and have him do competition with the oligarch kids and win.
I don't think Hrant has a driver's license, but we'll try. We'll first get him the driver's license.
Have you heard of like there is an episode in the Ford history that Ford was trying to get a license to sell his cars, but the association back then was monopolized. Like a couple of big players had an association. that had the right to give license, and they were not giving license. And he challenged the top player himself, who was like owning a car company, and he was very famous driver, racer. He challenged him with his Ford, and he won. Because his car was the best. He was not, if I'm not mistaken, he even didn't have a driver's license.
Okay, so that's a good precedent.
Yeah, he won because his car was, because he was great engineer and entrepreneur.
Okay.
So we need to do more of this stuff.
Yeah.
Because like numbers are there to justify what you say.
Right.
But people are making decisions based on emotions.
Yeah, exactly.
So we need, I think the community is lacking the emotional part because all are modest people.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting observation. I thought do you think there's opportunities for like outreach between tech community, tech sector to other? So do you think something like that is necessary, important, or is this getting?
Absolutely.
Into
that's in our plans. We haven't told them, but I'm happy to announce that after Digitech, we are planning to reach out to Montashian's business club, as well as Club Capital, and whoever are there.
They're more traditional businesses.
They're traditional businesses. They also have associations that is very, very important, and we highly encourage all businesses to do their, to come together and create their own associations. And we are happy to help them both with the institutional knowledge that UAT accumulated in the last 24 years, as well as providing technology and solving problems for them.
The other component that you mentioned that really interested me was this connection with more broadly, you know, sending delegations to visit different countries and having them come to Armenia and seeing what exchanges and stuff are possible. But specifically with China, I think, as you mentioned, you guys have gone 4 times already this year. And you plan on going again. And I think yesterday they announced that there's going to be direct flights from China to Armenia. I'll double check that before we publish this episode, but I think I just heard that.
Actually, I read that in
And not from Beijing or Shanghai or
other city.
That I think had like a manufacturing sector or something that was important to tech. What are the opportunities specifically with China that are so interesting to UAT and Armenian tech more broadly?
There are a couple of areas that I see we have great opportunities. One is our geographic location, considering the fact that it's giving us hard times, but it's also an advantage that we can connect the East with the West. Here we can be a bridge. Chinese companies can open branches in Armenia, and we have good English, we have the business knowledge. For hardware products, it will be hard. Of course, because logistics problems are there. That's more long-term and geopolitical question. But our software products, I think there is a good chance that Armenian companies could collaborate with joint ventures, with integrations, and so on and so forth, and become a channel for Chinese companies to sell to the West. To have a customer support here because of a time zone. The second is that China is now world's top innovative and one of the biggest economies, and we have a lot to learn. And also, it's a like 1,200,000 people market.
400, I think.
Yeah. 400, okay, yeah. Huge, huge market for Armenian entrepreneurs to consider.
Yeah.
Though we are more, the culture here is more Western because the business customers are there. But I think eventually that we learn more about how business is done in China, there is also, if Armenian companies could sell in US market, if Armenian PixArt could become a unicorn selling in US market, I think we can do it in China as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned this opportunity of the Chinese market, and the Chinese business community obviously wants to do business in the West, and the West wants to do the same in China, because at the end of the day, they want to sell their product where there's a demand for it, right? So there's, and the same with the Russian market, with the West and the West to Russia. Is there an opportunity here, you think, for Armenia to be kind of like a Hong Kong style country that is in some ways neutral between these two big poles and is acting as a bridge for the tech sector to operate?
I think there is an opportunity, and that always had been there. And sometimes in the history, we were able to utilize that. Sometimes we lost the opportunity. Now, this is the time that our government needs to make decisions. And this is geopolitical. We're talking about geopolitical decisions that I'm not into. I have no idea how it's done. But I believe this is a geopolitical problem that needs to be solved. And
you think it should be a priority for our government?
I think so. I think so. And I believe that our government understands and acts on that. But future will tell whether we are going the right direction or no. I don't know. I can't comment on that.
You said there have been opportunities throughout time where we had the chance to utilize it. Do you think we utilized it after the war started in Ukraine and a large group of Russian talent came to Armenia?
Oh, no.
We failed
that? Of course not. Yeah, we missed this opportunity.
Can you say more on that? In what way did we fail? Because now it's more than 2 years.
Yeah.
2.5 years.
We failed to quickly respond and create decent long-term regulations there. The government reacted actively and supported. But for the businesses to stay long-term, the continuity and the predictability is very, very important. And
predictability
the support
of the
was one, for 1 year, and the businesses didn't know if it will continue or not and how it will transform, considering the fact that other ecosystems are giving 10 years, 15 years, sometimes extremely like 30, 40 year visibility, how they want to operate on that. That was one mistake we did, that we couldn't do, at least for 5 years, didn't give them visibility and predictability.
As in, if for 5 years, they'll be operating under this specific regulatory
absolutely.
Taxation?
It was only for 1 year. And then it's continued, but before the decision was made, some companies already left because they didn't know how to plan for next year.
Even on the general law for startup incentives, since the inception of the law more than 10 years ago at this point, it's just constantly been renewed for 2 years, 1 year, 3 years.
Yeah.
That doesn't provide the environment that you're talking about of knowing 10, 15 years from now, it's going to be the same law.
Right? Actually, here we also, it's not efficient. So government is giving, investing in the area.
Yeah.
Because the decision is not giving visibility for long term, people are not utilizing it because they know what will happen next year.
Right.
In that sense, it's not being effective to keep people in Armenia.
It's not serving its purpose.
It's not serving, yeah.
On the topic of international companies and internationalization more broadly, Digitech is a conference is an event that happens every year in Armenia, and it's an Armenian-focused event usually. It's Armenian companies that are exhibiting their products and things they do and things of that nature. This year, WCIT is happening alongside Digitech, and WCIT is an international event, obviously. Hike sort of teased a little bit that there's an idea of making Digitech more international permanently moving forward. Tell us a little bit about that.
In that sense, Digitech's mission has been changing throughout the years. At the beginning, it was just let's get together to see who else is doing tech, because there were few people. Then it became more famous, more companies started. It became because a lot of talent is coming to Digitech. Let's go to Digitech to get access to talent, to hire, to promote our employer branding. Mm-hmm. Last years that we see that companies are struggling to acquire more customers, Digitech is shifting more into let's go to Digitech to find customers.
Mm-hmm.
But the customers aren't in Armenia, so we need to bring those customers to Armenia.
Right.
In that sense, WCIT is the anchor. So we use WCIT to, it's an international event, well-known event. So we bring international audience to Armenia, then make sure logistically that whoever stepped WCIT, they come Digitech and see our ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, we did a small experiment. We tried to invite international media to Digitech. And it was successful. Four major well-known, like Forbes, Independent, MakeYourself, and Benzinga came, even though the reporter of Benzinga wanted to have a call with me. And first question he asked, is it safe to travel to Armenia? Because the news are
telling. It was right after the events of Artsakh. Yeah.
Then when he was here, he was like, I feel like you treat me like a king. Like he was very impressed, yeah. Whatever he saw, both the cultural side and the tech side and so on. And I asked him, why did you came? He was like, because you told me you have a god of hospitality.
Right.
it's funny, but I sometimes use that as the last cherry on the top.
Yeah.
And this year WCIT helping us to bring more than 20 media to Armenia, and we had the case that a company that has branches in US and in Armenia, they got covered in Forbes because they were in Digitech in Armenia.
Right.
So I highly encourage, even if you haven't managed to get a booth, absolutely you should come, even if you are living abroad. This is the best time, October 4 to 7, the best time to be in Armenia if you are interested in tech,
mm-hmm.
or buying technology from Armenia. So I highly encourage businessmen from diaspora that are considering to buy digital products, technology products, to come check out Digitech, mm-hmm. and see what Armenian technology are there,
mm-hmm.
to solve their problems.
What about moving forward when WCIT won't be in Armenia next year, for instance? How do you continue to attract international companies, potential customers to come for Digitech?
Well, considering the experience the community had with the WCIT 2019, with the 19-year-old Digitech, and also last 5 years, companies are actively participating in international events, like CES, VivaTech, and so on. There is a lot of knowledge and connections that we have in the community. I'm not talking about only UAT. And I think it's time to have our own event promoted internationally. We know how to do it. We have the connections. And this time, the only problem will be the funding.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope government and municipality of Yerevan will be with us with this, as they were with us bringing WCIT to Armenia. This time we are going to propose them to invest in our homegrown event,
mm-hmm.
and make it more international. And actually last two and this Digitech, we see a lot of interest from Georgia, from Iran, and even from China. So if not this Digitech, next Digitech, you'll see Chinese companies in Digitech presenting their companies.
Man, that's incredible. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that. I want to go back to the four components that you laid out, because there was one more point there that was really interesting to me. You talked about digital transformation more broadly for non-tech companies, let's say, right? Like, for example, this is one point I've made on the podcast before, is in America and in Canada, the government will subsidize up to like $250,000 for implementing ERP systems for businesses. ERP systems, for those people who don't know, are like fancy accounting packages. And $250,000 is a lot of money. But the efficiency that it brings to a company is so high that they get the return on the growth in the economy, right? When you speak about greater like adoption of digital tools and digitization and things of that nature, is this what you're alluding to? Because one of the ways that tech impacts the economy more broadly is making the economy more efficient, right? And that isn't necessarily always felt in the tech sector's pie of the GDP, but it helps the overall GDP of the country grow by making other sectors efficient. And I think that's something that's really lacking in Armenia, because oftentimes Armenian tech companies are largely going for global markets, right? Which completely makes sense. It's in their interest. And sometimes those global solutions aren't easy to adapt to the Armenian market. for example, like in agrotech, we have like world-class agrotech startups like Intel and Air, but that's a solution built for large American crop fields, let's say, that's not necessarily suitable for Vajotsor's region, let's say. How do you see UAT's role in this part?
I think UAT's role here is more educational and on the policy level, and also helping to public-private and private-private discussion to level up this discussion, because actually our government right now have a good initiative on that. The Ministry of Economy announced that they are subsidizing, if I'm not mistaken, 70% of the costs if SME adopts the digital practices and smaller digital medium tools and so on. Business. And now I'm actively promoting it personally, talking to tech companies and telling them, if you need customers, you go teach the SMEs to apply for this program and sell your product to them. That's easy. It takes a little bit of pro bono consulting for the SME, because they don't understand the importance of it, and they don't know how to apply. They don't have the capacity and the competence. But tech people have this capacity and competence, so they can do that. I know also EBRD is subsidizing some part of this kind of activities. And another very good example that I discovered recently, and I started lobbying for that, is Kazakhstan government on the regulation level. They told the companies that you pay 1% less taxes, but you should invest that money. We don't want you to pay this to the government, but we want you to invest in your digitization and R&D. And there is a public portal where you publish the amount that you are going to invest. And they check, the government has the opportunity to check. And then you announce which problem you want to solve, which kind of tool you want to buy, or which kind of R&D you want to do. And you do public tender. And then choose the vendor and pay directly. And you report the government.
Right.
This way, they created $200 million market internally. Actually, Armenian companies also can apply for that, tender. So if you are doing outsourcing of or like any tech founder, if you are hearing me now, go check Kazakhstan public portal. I'm happy to share also this link with you. There are a lot of offers, a lot of problems stated with the budget. It's like freelancing jobs.
Right, it's like
you apply and if you make success, please let me know.
It's interesting, the example you brought up of like Armenian companies should help the traditional business, the SMEs, to apply for the grants. Like in Canada specifically, I know like most ERP vendors, they have someone on staff always that will help you fill out the grant and stuff. It's another example of a tech job making another job.
Actually, there is another point that I wanted to discuss regarding this area for government organizations. I see that I mentioned earlier today that we had some fails. And the reason we failed there, because what international companies are doing different is exactly what you mentioned. They have people in their team who come train the people who will use their tools. And with our companies, because all companies initially were doing only outsource, they didn't realize that to successfully deliver the product, they miss that part. So training the staff. And I see some local companies already learned that and they are moving towards that direction. And in the near future, we'll see some success cases there as well.
Man, fantastic. On the list of new things at UAT, the last thing I had on mine to discuss was HR Hub. Tell me what that is.
HR Hub is a very interesting story. It took 1 year to launch. Not because it was hard to launch, but because there were so many, focus was diluted to many other projects. So there are things that we decided to work with the community broader, not only with CEOs, but also key people, key decision makers within the companies. And through them also we work with 50,000 talent, being that software engineers, sales, HRs, marketing, and so on and so forth. And because the idea of association is that we solve problems that relate to all, and we solve problems that for one company it's hard to solve or doesn't make sense, and or return investment is very, very long term. That's the cultural things. For example, digital literacy. At the first glance, how it relates to tech or something like that, how it relates to efficiency. But we see this endless growth of salaries, and this is an HR problem. CEOs are putting these goals for HRs, but people are asking for a raise to their managers and HRs, right? How to solve this problem? If you have more digitally literate, financially literate people in your team, they will do investments, they will manage their money, and they will require less salaries. That's very simple.
You think that comes with financial literacy?
Of course, of course. Because what we see in the community now is that I have been engineer myself. Right. My salary grew from 50,000 dirhams to 1 million and more dirhams,
right,
in few years, like 2-3 years. And I didn't know how to manage that.
Right.
And you, what you do. So I'm bringing my example to not offend anyone, right? Usually we come from the villages and not coming from the families. Our families were grown up in Soviet Union, and our parents. And back then the financial management was totally different, right, for life. Now our parents don't know how to advise us.
Mm-hmm.
So we need experts who know how capitalistic ecosystems are working, right, and personal financial management, yeah, is a essential skill that, mm-hmm, we lack. And you see, when you are increasing your standards, then you are dependent on that salary.
Mm-hmm.
Then to do more, you require more salary.
Yeah. But from my experience, though, like, greater financial literacy brings greater knowledge of what is possible. So then you want more money to do what's possible. So.
Okay, but
I totally agree with what you're saying.
But it's also, when you ask for salary raise, that's maybe that have another reason. I'm not, right, saying this will solve at all the salary raise. It's not. We will always have people who are asking to raise, but they will raise for another reason, not because they are in financial trouble.
Right. Which is a great way to put it.
and another thing is that we adopted on a highest level, on premier minister level, the comprehensive defense agenda, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And here we see that for businesses, so the comprehensive defense says whole of society, right? All components of all members of society, private, public, individuals, shall know what their duties are in case of emergency, disaster, war, whatever. So here we have a role to play as an association, as an NGO. And we need to promote, first case is to promote that, so people understand this concept,
mm-hmm,
and ask themselves question, if there is an earthquake, what am I going to do? Few CEOs know if there is an emergency, the CEO is responsible for the safety of their staff.
Legally.
And there are certain measures, if not taken, you could end up being in the jail.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's good to know.
A few CEOs know about that. I discovered recently.
Yeah.
So we need to promote that. We need to make people aware about that.
Yeah.
And the best people to do that are HRs.
Mm, okay.
So, and these are the topics that made me think, okay, who are the people who most talk about these kind of things to people? And they are responsible for that. Those are the HRs. So we decided to create HR Hub to start working with HRs on that like long-term problems. Meanwhile, having them come together, do experience sharing, and so on and so forth. I got asked that why we are doing, how this is different from HR associations. This is not for HR specialists. This is for people who are responsible for HR. Sometimes it's the founder, sometimes it's the CEO, maybe COO, or whoever is caring about their people, their culture. They want to make happy their employees happy. So it's not for HR professionals.
It's HR as a responsibility.
It's for HR as a responsibility. And I want to thank also Magnus HR, Ani, who also, like, HR Hub was born out of conversation between me and Ani. And I was telling her, like, I think this way, how we solve this problem and so on. And she was like, oh, I have also idea. We exchanged the idea and was like, oh, let's do this HR Hub. So this is UAT HR Hub. We have two recruiting agency in our membership, Magnus HR and Mittal. Both are actively participating, helping us to solve HR problems, both in the UAT as an organization and also do this experience sharing with other HR people.
And then what format does it happen? Is it like a meetup that happens with those people?
It's monthly meetups. First, we are checking the water and we want to create this momentum. Second phase is that once we have enough people and we understand what are the topics that are interesting for them, let's say some people are interested in financial literacy, some people in comprehensive, some people mm-hmm. other than disaster management or any crisis management or whatever they are interested. We offer every UAT member to come up with their agenda as well, their topics as well, their speakers. And the next phase would be we go more deep and do trainings, financial literacy training. Samson Avetyan is mm-hmm. Doing fantastic great. three-day personal finance management workshop, which is I participated personally and learned a lot. Though it's hard to implement, confess. And also, we are now preparing for other trainings mm-hmm. as well.
Fantastic. Tell us a little bit about Digitech's format and schedule this year. What's it going to contain?
This year, Digitech is special in a way. Every year it's special, but it's special in a different way. The special way is that that we have WCIT. Because of that, CEOs will be in WCIT. We provide more content to broader community and specialists, engineers, HRs, sales, marketing, and so on and so forth. So there will be DigiTalks, where experts will share knowledge for experts. And in terms of mapping, it starts with educational projects, starting from our own projects, Armat, Inoijevan, going to ACAs and other projects that wanted to participate this year. Then it goes to the main hall where all tech companies are around startups. So the middle line of booth, we dedicated for 84 startups. This is unprecedented amount of startups that we are going to showcase this year.
84 Armenian startups.
All Armenian startups. And the applications are still open. So if you... And we are accepting even the groups that haven't incorporated yet and they don't have money to pay, but they worked on their project. Some of them will get chance to get sponsorship as well and participate for free. The idea is to show as many new ideas because people are coming to Digitech to see what's new. Mm-hmm. Of course, everybody knows that big companies, established companies every year are showcasing new features, new products, very interesting. But also people want to see who are the upcoming next Pixarts, Crisps, Service Titans, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. And this year you will see 84 of them. And another interesting new feature or product that we are offering this year to our visitors is the DigiInvest area that we partnered with Finarm, which is a Financial Organizations Association, and extra 2,000 square meter area is dedicated for more than 15 financial institutions, as well as a conference hall for all fintech, financial investment topics, all 3 days.
Is this for consumer investors to learn about how to make investments?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
So not about investing in startups or things like that?
Yeah. Soon we'll announce also the sponsor of this area. And also there is another interesting place that we called Tech Balcony, which is again a space where with limited access that people can do one-on-one meetings, group discussions, and so on and so forth in a more informal way, like leisure cozy area. This year we are providing also Tech Square, which is open air experience without getting out of Digitech. So within the building there is an open area where we'll have Azat Azen, so you can check your skills
of shooting.
Food and music and chill and sound and so forth. So that area is very new. We'll have Kids Zone. And also a very important thing, last Digitech was the first Digitech that had registration. Mm-hmm. And we are not going to wave it away. This year Digitech also is with registration. It's free to attend, but you have to register, and highly encourage to register before coming to get easy and fast access. Mm-hmm. And in the front, outside, there will be very interesting fun activities and fun things to see, starting from agro drones to air balloons and very, very interesting, like festival kind of thing. Because the last day of Digitech is festival. The first day is business day. CEOs are coming, deals are making, officials are coming. Second day is more for professionals, for HRs, for professionals. And the last day is festival. We want grandmas and pas with their kids, grandkids to visit Digitech to see what technology has to offer for their kids. So come, have fun, make deals, and appear in the world media.
And remind people where Digitech is.
It's Meridian Expo Center, as last year we had Voskerichneri Meg, first Voskerichneri.
Yeah.
Where our office is also.
Right. And WCIT is in Hamalir.
WCIT is in Hamalir. There is a portal where you enter and we take you from WCIT to Digitech,
right,
as well as from Digitech. There is a portal where you take you to.
Yeah. So does the WCIT portal have four wheels and drives through the city?
Yeah, and it's covered with some experience as well.
Awesome. What's something I should have asked you that I didn't?
I think you squeezed me.
I got it all out.
Yeah.
Then last question, Sek, is since it was a really broad conversation, I'll narrow it down to one thing. In 5 years, what do you hope Digitech to be?
Main challenge with what I want to be Digitech to be is the space. So I see that no building in Armenia can accommodate Digitech, and we closed the Republic Square down to a municipality, and all this area is covered with fantastic international and local companies, and we closed all halls nearby hotels, in nearby hotels, and there are all conversations about recent technology trends and so on and so forth.
Digitech 2029, we hope to see it. Sakis, thank you so much for coming on today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, Sakis.